good morning. Appreciate so much your coming to be with us. We're looking at the nature of God and the awesome picture we see of Him as He reveals Himself to us. And I want you to turn this morning in the Bible study to John, the Gospel of John in the first chapter. Think about all the places we could go. We could spend in the creation itself and look at the creation and the marvel of what went on there. And then you look at some of the statements about the qualities and character of God in the prophets. Isaiah, the sixth chapter, is a great place to go, where Isaiah, Uzziah had been a great king for 52 years, had died, and Isaiah, probably like most people, who's going to be the king next? What's going to happen now? You may wonder in this country, how did President Obama get to be the president? God put President Obama to be the president. How did President Bush get to be there? Don't be frustrated at whatever politics says or does, because God is the one ruling the nations, and we just need to not worry about those sort of things and just be what we should be all the time. But you see, Isaiah was probably concerned sometime, like we get concerned. Well, how are things going to go now? Well, don't worry. Don't be disturbed at all. God is working out His plan. And so what we see really in Isaiah is when Isaiah saw this condition, went into the temple, and when he went into the temple was shaken, and it disturbed him and troubled him to see the smoke filling the temple. And then he heard these cherubims saying, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty." And Isaiah saw the holy nature and the glory of God. And when he saw that, it made him realize, as he looked and saw that, he realized his sinful condition. And when we stand ourselves up next to the Lord Jesus, we should see our condition, how poor and how bad off we are when we do that. We might compare pretty good with other people, but we don't compare well at all when we stand up next to God and see who He is. And so Isaiah saw that, saw himself. He thought surely he would die as a result of that. And what you notice then is he gets a taste of the mercy of God. God, coals were taken by an angel with tongs from a coal off the fire and touched his lips, of all things. You might wonder, why does somebody's lips need to be cleansed? Well, think about what you do with your mouth all the time. And so his lips, his sins were purged, and so he experienced the pardon of God. And then he heard a conversation of God, "Who shall we send? Who shall go for us?" And Isaiah didn't say, "Well, how far? How long? What will it cost?" Isaiah heard God say, "Who will go?" And Isaiah said, "Here am I. Send me." And then he began to learn the task of doing that and realizing that when you go and do this, you're going to make people's hearts get hard. But the thing to understand about that is, as long as there are people around, you just keep preaching to them. Don't ever get discouraged. Don't feel like you're failing your success. I tell a story about years ago driving out from Madison with a bunch of preachers going to the debate somewhere. And I said, "That house right there is the only house I've had success on this road out here." And somebody said, "Well, did you baptize somebody there?" I said, "No." They said, "Well, what do you mean you had success?" I said, "That's the only place I've had a Bible study out here. Haven't had any Bible studies in these other houses. I just need to go tell the people. What they do with it's their business." And so you see pictures of that in the Old Testament. The awesome nature. Isaiah seen the holiness. What should cause us to want to go to work? The holiness of God ought to do that. We could look at His purity. We could talk about His comfort in Isaiah, the 40th chapter. What a great God, when His people were getting ready to go into captivity. In the 40th chapter of Isaiah, comfort ye, my people. So when you get ready to face trouble and battles and conflicts, some struggle, you don't know what's coming between here and the grave. There may be some monster waiting for you on the next corner you don't even know about. But don't you ever get worried. Don't you ever become bothered. You take comfort in the fact that God, He'll give you the wings to soar up. When everybody else is run down and wore out, you'll be able to raise up and soar like eagles. And when young men wear down, old men will still keep running, because God will strengthen you. You can't do it on your own, and you can't do it by your own strength. But if you trust in God, He'll comfort you and give you strength all the way. Now let's look at the first chapter of the Gospel of John. Notice what we see here is the picture of a God who wants to make Himself known to us. Have you ever thought about the fact that you meet sometimes, I've run across the tracks of some great people in my lifetime, been able to meet some important, significant people, and even in other countries. And I've noticed how most often those people, if they are great and wonderful, they tend not to want to be bothered with peasants like me, or to talk to somebody like me. But here's a God that is so great and so awesome and so wonderful, and yet we find Him wanting to make Himself known to everybody. Wanting everybody to come to know Him. And so we read in John, the first chapter, verse 1, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. And notice, here's a picture of this Word we talked about last night. And this one being the Word, this the Word that is used here in the Greek language, and I know nothing about Greek, so I'll just tell you what little I know, is the word, I believe, logos. And we find this word in Romans, the 12th chapter, you remember, when you give yourself as a living sacrifice. This is your worthy, this is your logical, or your reasonable, or your spiritual service. And so that word is a reference to something that is logical. When you look at logos, it's kin to our word logic, you see. And so when a Greek person read this, and they understood that language we don't sometimes understand, when they read that in the beginning was the Word, here's somebody with God who is called the logical, or the reasonable, or the eternal purpose for what makes things the way they are. This word logos means the logical reason for everything. So that would mean they would read this, well, there's somebody with God in the beginning who's the logical reason for all of this, has a logical reason to it. Yes, it does. Everything about it is logical when you look at it. And who gives it that meaning is Jesus. And so when a Greek person read that, he saw something sometimes that we don't think about. Here's this one who is the logical reason for everything, the eternal purpose for everything. And then when you think about the Hebrew people, when they read this, I'm sure you're familiar, and the Septuagint was translated 200 years before Jesus came, the Greek Old Testament. And when they came to this word, logos, or the word in the Old Testament, where when they would find the word, this word logos in the Greek translation, they found this word 3,808 times. And every time they found it, it is the word when it says, God said. When God said something, that was His Word going out. And when God said, let there be light, the universe lit up. An active power, powerful action took place when God said, let there be light. And so you read that statement in Isaiah, the 55th chapter, verse 8, that God says, My thoughts are not your thoughts, my ways are not your ways. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my thoughts higher than your thoughts, and my ways higher than your ways. And just like the rain and the snow that comes down out of heaven, it doesn't return, but it produces, it waters the earth. And it gives seed to the sower and bread to the eater. And so shall my word be. It goes out. It shall not return to me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please. And so they saw, when they read this word, a Hebrew speaking person, when they read this text and they understood what was being said, they saw this word logos to be the active cause for everything. The powerful active cause for what makes everything the way it is. Now think about that. We don't get that in this word by just reading it. But this is how those people, from their background, understanding their language, how they looked at a word like this. But now notice what John does with it. When John tells us about this logos here, he's introducing us to it, and he even writes about it in 1 John. But he tells us that this one was with God and was God. So here's one who is with God, and he was everything there is about the nature of God, all the character and qualities of his, like manhood or godhood, whatever it is to be God, this one, this word, has all of those qualities. He was with God, so God was not alone, and he was God. And so what we find about him, and that says, what that says is, if you want to find meaning, if you want to learn about God and know about God, and when John goes on to show us in the 14th verse of this chapter, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, John is saying, you know what happened? When God wanted to really reveal Himself to you and really make you see who He was, this one called the Word, God opened His mouth to speak to you, and Jesus stepped out on the pages of human history and time. And so we go from the creation of the world and put our finger down in time to where somebody lived that people saw and experienced. So we're putting our finger somewhere historically when Jesus came into the world. So here's a figure that we see and know as God, who was with God, and he was with God in the very beginning. was with God. But now notice, after he tells us that this one, that God is going to help us to understand him by speaking to us in a way that we would not be terrified by his glory. If Jesus had come with all his glory, we couldn't have stood in his presence. Have you ever thought about approaching God the way we are? You see this in the Old Testament. When Moses came near to God, he was told to stop and take your shoes off because the ground where you stand is holy ground. Was there gold dust in the sand? No. It was God's presence that would have destroyed Moses if he had come too close. At Mount Sinai, don't let your animals come up. Don't let some man come up and come near, because if you do, you'll be destroyed. Here, approaching God would be like us trying to go up and touch the sun. It would melt us away, the glory. Have you ever thought about the word glory is from the word sun rays, magnificence or splendor? The rays of God and who He is are beyond our ability to approach. And so here now, for us to understand, to see God, God is going to have to somehow lay that glory aside and step down here among us for a while and let us look and see who He is by watching the Word become flesh. But now notice in verse 3 it says, all things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. Now get into your mind for a moment too. Now Jesus is the one we're talking about. And everything we see, everything we know, where did it come from? Where's the origin? First of all, we see the origin. We understand God by looking at Jesus. Now let's try to find some meaning. Why does the universe bother to exist? Have you ever wondered that? Why does the universe bother to exist? Let me tell you, it's because of Jesus. That's why it bothers to exist. And everything you look at, I've seen the Devil's Cataract and up in Zimbabwe on the Victorian, Zambezi River, and the marvel of that, miles and miles of waterfall. It just looks like unbelievable to look at such a thing. But I looked at that and I thought, I just looked up a little bit and I could see in my own spiritual mind the Lord above that. That was giving glory to Jesus because of what it was. Niagara Falls, same thing. Anything, mountains, the sky, the stars, whatever you look at, every bit of it is giving glory. It bothers to exist because Jesus made it that way. And think about how small of a speck we are. I've told people to try to... I was trying to tell you the other night about the earth spinning around at about 100 miles an hour this way. And then we're taking off and going... Somebody said we're going about 1,000 miles an hour. We're going somewhere. I'm going to tell you, better hang on. Put your seatbelt on. Because we're really moving around here, you see. But when you think about the fact that if you could take this room and fill this room, fill it up with sand to the very brim. Put all the sand particles in there you could put in here. Fill this room completely up with sand. And then take this room and start stretching it. And causing those sand particles to move apart until you got this room to be the size of the earth. And we give you a microscope and say, now you start spending your time going through this space as wide as the earth. Every day spend all day long looking at all these grains of sand through that microscope. And you did that for 10,000 years. You came back and said, well, I did that. We said, well, you didn't find anything. You said, okay, go back for 10,000 more years and see, keep looking at those particles of sand. And all of a sudden, one day, you come upon a grain of sand in the space that you're in with a mass of what's there. And you see this one little grain of sand that has a blue cast to it. Then wonder what that could be. So you start zooming in close. And you get down and you start seeing, well, that's the earth we're on. And you come in a little closer and closer and closer. And, well, boy, look there, Cookie down there. Boy, look at that. Hey, Cookie. Well, look what a little ant he is in the vastness of what I'm looking at here. And we want to think we can tell God something? Do we realize how arrogant we can become when we begin to see what Jesus, just in our little speck of all that's here that we know about, we have no concept of it. And to know that He stood, you know what gives the universe meaning? He stood at the beginning of it and He made all of it. So He gives meaning to God by looking at Jesus. He gives meaning to the universe by looking at who He is and what He was able to do. We're able to begin to get some concept that I do not know. I cannot even begin to fathom or imagine what I'm talking about when I think about who Jesus is. And that He would come down here and do what He did. But these verses help us to see, when we look at these statements and people look at these words as they did in those days, sometimes we don't look at them quite the way that they did. But we begin to see some of that. And you know, you can think about that when you look at the ability. You know, when you look at painters, when they paint some beautiful picture, you know what you're seeing? You're seeing the a painter painting the sunset. You're seeing them take their ability and their skill and their talents and paint that beautiful picture. But when you look at the picture, you don't see the artist. You can see his name on there. All you're seeing is his skill, his ability, his nature of what he can do. I said, my wife, she'll make me what I call a Texas pound cake. We got the recipe out of Texas. And she'll put sugar and butter and lard and flour, or whatever. I don't know what you put in the cake, but she'll put eggs and all that in there. And she'll mix that up and put plenty of sugar, which is what I like in it. And she'll mix that up just right. And she'll put in one of these pans. We got these little roughly top things on it, and put it down in there and bake it that way and turn it on. And put it on the table and drip some of that white icing, which I love, down on that thing. When I take my knife and go to cut into that cake, I look at it and I know several things. First of all, my wife sure does love me because she worked awful hard. And my wife is awfully smart to know how to get that thing just the right flavor and the right texture to eat. And so I know all these things. She has this great ability and skill. When I take my knife and put it into that cake, I don't expect to find my wife inside of it. You know, there are people who believe that God is inside of what He created. People worship snakes and cows and rivers because they say that God is... No! God is not in those things. You're just seeing the signature of God. You're seeing the skill and the ability and the nature and the power of who God is. You're not seeing God inside of that thing. And so this concept that people have of that's the kind of God that they serve is a misnomer completely. We're just seeing the working, the hand working, the finger working of God, you see. Here's in Isaiah, I've often said if I had made the earth right now, you'd have to have a seatbelt on set here, because I wouldn't have thought to measure the mountains out in a balance and make sure this thing, I'd had it so we'd be sitting here like this, and it'd be out of balance, we'd be waving back and forth every time we moved a little bit. But God balanced out that ocean and mountains and scale. And if you want to know how much water's here, God said, well, let me show you here. That's it right there. In the hollows, and you want to know how wide the earth is, God said, well, it's just a hand span. Do we understand when we sing who we are singing to and what God has done and the marvel of trying to just get a glimpse of what we see when that one that was in Jesus. Jesus came, God came and was incarnate in the man and came into this world. And He made all things, everything that we see and look at. So He gives meaning to the universe. He gives meaning to God Himself. And notice it says then in verse 4, and in Him was life, and some translations say that life was the light of men. And so here's this life, and the life was the light of men. And so it's a picture of Jesus coming to the world, and He is the light of men. What does that mean? Here's this life, you see. This one that has life, and this life is the light of men. You want to know how to live? I love that statement. It's in 2 Peter 1, verse 3, that He has given us all things that pertain unto life and godliness. That word life is from the word zoology. It's the study of life itself. And I tell folks what that means is, God's trying to tell you, I've told you everything about how to live in a zoo. You're living in a zoo down here, really. And you need to know how to live in that zoo and what to do. How to understand life. So how can you understand how to live and what to do? What is the meaning? What gives meaning to life? Have you ever tried to figure out, scientists are trying to struggle to find some definition when you try to, they struggle, what is life? Well, they're struggling to try to come up, protoplasma and this and that and all kind of things. And they struggle to try to tell you what life is. We can't create. We don't have, we were talking on the porch about seeds. You can take all the chemistry of seeds. A scientist can take all those chemicals, put them together, mix them up, and bake them or do whatever, and put them in the dirt, and they never will ever grow. We can't do it. The life is in the seed itself, and God put that there, you see. And here's a picture of how do you know what gives meaning. You want to know how to live. You want to know how to enlighten your life so that you will find joy, happiness, peace, and purpose, and meaning, and so that you will be a blessing to other people, and it will just give you so much so that Peter says you can love life and see good days. You know how to do that? You realize that the only way I can do it is to see this light. to look at Jesus and to try to determine what His attitude was, how He treated people, what He did, why He was here, why He stayed here, and the purpose why He came, all of that we see is found in Jesus. And so here is the one who gives us the light of life. You know, I mentioned last night about lights, and when I was a young boy, I used to love to catch snakes. And it amazed me how you go out in the field and take a shovel or a pick or something and go out there and turn big rocks over. But if you want to catch snakes, you've got to be quick. Because when the light shines in those dark holes where they're hiding, they all run for cover. They don't want to be seen in the light, you see. Here's a picture of how we need to see this light as something that will enlighten and fresh us. It's like a well of water. When you get these words inside of you, they just bubble up and flow out and run everywhere. And when you, my grandpa, I told one time my cousin would come to the country all the time, and I'd have to carry water from the creek to the spring up to the house and put in a bucket from my grandmother. And my cousin would come to the city, and I'd be coming up there with two buckets, and he'd run and run at me like he's going to run into me, and I'd slosh the bucket, try to get out of him. He'd just aggravate me to death doing that. And I told my grandma that, and she said, you go down there and fill those buckets full of water, and when he comes running, you just let him run into you, and you'll just slosh water all over him. And she said, you do the same thing with God's Word. You fill yourself up with it, and everybody bumps into you, just spill it out onto him when you bump into him. So if we can see that these words are like living water, and if we can just take these words and get them inside of us, it becomes like a well. And you drink out of it. You don't even have to have your Bible with you. You can be sitting and talking to somebody, and they can be frustrating you, and you can think about things, and it will just make you... I've been in several situations where the Bible just made me smile when somebody was wound up about to blow their head off with heat and aggravation, and I just kept thinking about verses that helped me to be calm and to be what I should be. And so here's a picture of Him being the light. So the life. So what gives meaning to life? What gives meaning to the universe? What gives meaning to God? It's this one who came in the very beginning. But notice verse 5 says, and the light shined in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. And this word comprehended is a neat word. I think you probably studied and know that it can be used in two ways. Comprehend can be to, I might say, well, I'm going to get a hold of somebody, and I'm going to grasp, this word, it's the word grasp in some translation. I might say, I'm going to grab that little boy going to the back door there. I believe I can handle him. I'm going to grab him, and I'm going to grasp him, and I'm going to overpower him. You see, the darkness cannot overpower. It does not have the ability, though. Have you ever been in a dark room? I was in Mammoth Cave years ago. I felt like I never knew what outer darkness was until I got in the Mammoth Cave and it turned all the lights off. I couldn't even see my hand. I couldn't see anything. I mean, down in the bowels of the earth where there was no light, it was so dark. And when this old boy struck a match, I was amazed at how that one match in that dark place was so bright. And then some other guys were like me and myself. I won't tell that, but I did have a cigarette lighter. And so everybody started, and every individual lit their lights up. I remember one years ago, they were talking about in a stadium somewhere where somebody was going to preach at nighttime, and somebody in the city, there were a lot of people who didn't want this to happen. They turned the lights off in that stadium out in California back in the 60s now. And they said when that all the lights went off in the stadium, everybody thought, oh, we fixed those people. But several people had matches and lighters, and they started lighting them. And they said when everybody got their lighters and their matches lit, the people could see the glow from that stadium miles away. Think about what all of us, if we see that this light shines in us and we shine it, if we all shine it together, that will make it that much brighter. And if we can see this light that is in us that lightens every man, each one of us has got to be lit by this light. This light shines in the darkness, and so it cannot be overpowered. I used to teach a class with young people, and I would do that sometime. There was no windows in the room, and I'd put a towel down along the door, and I'd turn the lights off in there. And I say, J.C., can you see me? And he said, no, Mr. Sandusky, I can't see you. I say, Matt, can you see me? He said, no, I can't see you, Dad. And so I talked to him. I said, do you all see how dark it is? He said, yeah, it's dark. And I would turn the light on. I said, where did the darkness go? I said, did anybody see a fight going on there? The darkness was trying to hold the light back. And I said, I flipped the switch, and the darkness expelled itself. Because darkness cannot overpower light. And it cannot grasp it. It can't hold it. And it can't win against it. It cannot be victorious. So let me tell you, if you want to be victorious, make sure you step out in the light and you walk in the light. And you come, as Proverbs the 6th chapter shows, you draw near. If you get closer to the light will get brighter. If you go away from it, guess what? I used to go in the country. We had the outhouse was kind of, a farmhouse was here, and there was a ridge like that, and the outhouse was over on the other side of that ridge for a reason. And at nighttime, I would have to go out there, so I'd walk up on that ridge, and there was a light on the back of the farmhouse. It would light all the way up to that top. I'd go up there and I'd just be as bold as I could be walking in that light. I wasn't afraid, and I felt comfort for the light. But when I got on the other side, I started going down. Every once in a while, an apple would fall out of the apple tree over there. And I knew it was a Bengal tiger, you know. And I would run fast as I could go, get down there and tend my business and run back to the light. Because in the darkness, I told about a friend of mine I went to visit one night in the middle of the night, and I knocked on the door and nothing happened, and it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, so I knocked again, and all of a sudden I heard, ah! And I thought, what in the world is going on in there? And so my friend came to the door and opened the door, and I said, Terry, are you okay? He said, I don't know. I said, well, what happened? I was just knocking on the door. He said, well, when you started knocking, I was afraid you were going to wake the kids up. So I jumped up without turning the lights on. I run to the door. He said, I didn't know the cat was laying in the middle of the living room floor. He stepped on the cat's tail, and the cat jumped up and clawed him. He jumped up and hit his head on a chandelier. He said, if you're running around in the dark, you're going to kill yourself. That's the truth about it. If you run around in the dark, you're going to kill yourself. Come out to the light. Come to the light. Become enlightened. Because I tell you, light is going to prevail. Light is going to win. And so if you want to be on the winning side, just come on over here to it. And God's welcoming us by looking at Him, seeing Him. He's enlightening us so we can see what life is all about. And then He says to us in verse 7, the same came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all men through Him might believe. Now notice what this light is doing. It's informational, you see. And if you come to it, you will see this light will give you information so you can believe something. You can believe what's right. You can't, if you're in the dark, you don't know what to believe. You've got to be able to see to know what the light is. So here's the one who came and enlightened the world. And verse 8 says, He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. And notice, here's a reference, of course, of John the Baptist, who came first of all. And what did John do? John was preparing the way for the one who would come. Isaiah, the 40th chapter, tells us. So here's a picture of John coming, preparing the way, being a witness to the light. And that was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. So here's the true revelation. John the Baptist was a witness, warning and trying to tell people about him coming, setting the way. And you know, you think about Isaiah showing a highway being built, a way for people to... John was preaching, and John was trying to get the hearts of everybody on the same level page. He was trying to bring the arrogant to come down and the lowly to come up, and for all of us fathers and children to be turned together, a picture of everybody. That's what the highway is. Getting everybody to be humble and to come into this highway that leads on to holiness. And so he tells us in verse 9, the true light, which lighteth every man that comes to the world. So the only way you'll ever be enlightened and ever come to know is you've got to finally say, I don't know anything, Jesus. You tell me. And I'm not going to try to tell you and try to advise you or tell you where you missed something. No, I'm not going to do that. He's the one who has the light. And He has got to be the one to enlighten me. I've said quite often, you know, we sometimes think about this world like we know what we're doing. And it's about like, to me, I said, if you were to see if a fish could talk to you, and you were to ask a fish, what is water like? He said, what are you talking about? That's all I know. I've never lived up on the land. I don't know. If you were to say, well, listen, there's a whole other world out here that you have no concept. It's just an amazing world. You come up and step out here and see what's out there. He knows nothing. He only knows about the water. Don't ask a human being about what this world is about. This is all I know. If I were to go somewhere else, if somebody had come from some other place and come here and told me, look, I've been over there, I've come there, and there's something over here that's far greater than you ever imagined, I'd say, okay. I don't know about that. I've got to listen to somebody who's been there. So let's don't ask somebody else what life is about. Let's listen to what God says and paint the picture of what God wants us to be. And then notice, after He tells us that, notice the response that we see in verse 10. He was in the world, and the world was made by Him, and the world knew Him not. Now think about that for a minute or two. Here's somebody who came into this world, and after 3.5 years or so of preaching, they just couldn't take enough of Him doing what He was doing, and so they decided they were going to destroy Him.
Have you ever read the little book, The Country of the Blind? H.G. Wells may have been the writer of that, but he tells a story about a man who fell down off this mountain somewhere and fell down among a bunch of people who were all blind. He was the only one that could see. And so he began to tell them and show them things, that tell them things they couldn't see and experience so they could make things better. And it just they just couldn't tolerate the fact that he kept telling them they were doing things wrong and they needed to change and do what he said. And so they decided, we're going to get together, we've got to do something about this fellow. So they had a meeting, and then what they decided? He's so much trouble to us, we'll put his eyes out. That's what people want to do to us. They want to put our eyes out because we can see and they don't want to see. So we're a problem. We're a square peg in a round hole in this world. We're out of place in this world, you see. You ever gotten a splinter in your finger or a speck in your eye and it just drives you crazy? You want to get that out of there? Well, that's the way the world looks at us, you see. Here we are in this world trying to tell people, trying to get them to see what I expect them to want to get rid of me and to destroy me in some way, the same way they did Jesus. But he came to his own, or he came to the world, and the world did not recognize him. When they hung Jesus on the cross, who made the slivers of cold Roman steel that they drove through his hands and his feet? Who made the steel? Who made the crown? Who made the thorn bush that they formed the crown of thorns to drive down on his head? Who made the tree that can pump water through wood? Have you ever tried to pump water through wood? What kind of pump would you need to pump water through wood to build and make a beautiful tree? Who made the tree that they nailed him to? Who made the scourge from the leather from the animals and from the bones and the steel and stone that they put in that scourge? He came into the world. I'm amazed at that. People who would have lived in the world, I just can't imagine people. These people seeing these miracles and knowing their miracles and knew they couldn't deny them, but they tried to find some way. It just shows how bad off we can be. But here's one who came into the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. Now that's kind of shocking to me to think about that, but I want you to notice verse 11. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. Now you think about this for a minute. Here are the Jewish people, and they would assemble together every Sabbath day and read the Old Testament over and over and over. And they just kept looking at these Old Testament passages about who was coming. They knew somebody was coming, and they had some idea of what it was about. They read it with a prejudiced view, and they couldn't see it. Do you think that we can do that? You know, we can get to where we look at our Bible, and we've thought something so long, when somebody shows us something we never thought, it just upsets us. So we did, well, I'm not going to change my mind. And matter of fact, Jesus said in John 16, verse 1, that you could get to where Jesus said there will be those who will think they're doing God's service when they kill you. The people who are serving God. You mean God's own people. And people who think they're serving God could kill somebody who is serving God and think they're doing God's service. Yes. So that says, good people, let's don't get too careless about reading our Bible. We come together and read it and read it and read it. Let's don't get set in our own ideas about things. Let's just keep reading our Bible. Let's try to see what it really has to say. And so the result of what happened, the reaction is, he came in the world did not recognize him. He came to his own, they did not receive him, the one who created all the things that they saw. And then verse 12 says, but as many as received him, to them gave he power, or the right, or the authority, to become the sons of God. Now notice something. This verse says, to those who receive him, if you will receive Jesus today, let me tell you what you have. You have the power or the right to become. To become. You're not a child of God if you receive him. You have the right or the power to become a child of God. Even to those who believe. You see, you've got to take a step where you believe, and you believe so that you heed and do what he has to say. And so these verses just help us see in the very beginning what it was for Jesus coming to this world. And look at verse 14 again. It says, the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. We beheld His glory. The glory is the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. And you know that phrase is used when you see more than once here, verse 16. For of His fullness we have all received grace for grace. This word grace for grace means wave upon wave. When you think about what God has done, you know, you get up in the morning and you pray to God, God forgive me for what I've done in the past and help me today to do better. And you go through that day and you go to the end of the day and you know you haven't done what you should have done and you say, God forgive me again. And guess what? The waves, have you ever sat by the ocean and just thought about every time that water rolls, grace just keeps flowing over me. Every moment, every breath you take, every bite of food you eat, everything you're able to look at and see, waves of grace we've received from Him, truth and grace, and the grace just keeps waving over. God doesn't have to, He has rich mercy and His great grace and mercy toward us. And notice the writer would say in verse 29, and the next day, John seeth Jesus coming to him and said, behold, the Lamb of God, which takes away the sin of the world. You know what that says? That all the Old Testament animal sacrifices and everything that they did in the Old Testament, all that was pointing to the fact that God was going to send His Lamb one day. So all the religion of the Old Testament, all the prophets were pointing to this one who was going to come into the world and become man and live among us and teach us. Here is how to live. Here is what you want. You want to find meaning and purpose to everything. To God, to the universe, to the world. You want to find meaning to life. You want to find meaning to religion. You want to find what the meaning of everything is about, the key to the whole thing. Is that we serve an awesome God. Made it known in 320 pages. Have you ever read the Koran? Or the Hindus, have you seen the Hindu 1,800 pages and doesn't make a bit of sense on any page you read? And 320 pages. If I was going to tell you I'd get to heaven from here, I'd make a mess trying to write a book for you. And I could never have done it. In a few words. What a marvel the Holy Spirit has done. What amazing God. He's made Himself known.